Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I take what you made, but I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I take what you made, but I got to put you down.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Top Men Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of The Fight City, and by now, most of the regular listeners either know or probably heard me saying it on last week's show with Eris that, unfortunately, James Foley is not going to be able to be joining me regularly for at least a little while. We're planning on reuniting down the road sometime, but for now, we both got stuff going on, you know. No Splitsville here. It's just got adult shit going on, people. You know, what do you want me to say? But today, special show, with me, joining me in just a few minutes is going to be Matthew Swain of the Queensberry Rules, my old haunts. He's one of the curmudgeoniest curmudgeons, but underneath the scruffy exterior and the, you know, biting hatred of most things living, he just really wants to dance, you know? Just wants to dance. So let's let him dance today. We're going to set him loose as soon as he gets here, and we're going to be talking a little bit about, I'd have to say our main topic is going to go ahead and be what's been dominating boxing news in the last 24 hours or so, and that is the surprise announcement of Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Amir Khan. Yeah, it kind of just came out of nowhere at all. I don't know. I don't know what to tell everybody, but we're going to try to make some sense of that today, I guess, as much sense as we can possibly make of it. Who knows? But we also need to be getting on to a little bit of this Sergey Kovalev versus Jean-Pascal rematch discussion. But without any further ado, I can't speak. Matthew Swain, sir.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks again for joining me, and looking forward to it.
Oh, my pleasure, as always.
So, let's dive right in here. Canelo versus Amir Khan. What? Why? What? Who? Where? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. It's that's one of those you just kind of have to laugh at. It's ridiculous.
It's strange. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I have been an Amir Khan hater for a long, long time. So I had always hoped he would never get one of those big paydays he was always bitching about not being able to get. And at the same, so I'm conflicted on this one because I know he's going to get his skull detonated, but at the same time, I know he's going to get paid really well to have it happen. So I don't know.
I think
it's just so stupid.
I mean, I'm on a few different boats there with you, because, I mean, for the most part, I have to say straight out that, generally speaking, I'm entertained by Amir Khan fights, because he's either, you know, showing immense talent and really great boxing ability, he's really quick, etc., or he's getting, like, obliterated, or, you know, dinged around and barely winning, is in the case of a few fights too. So, I mean, almost all of those options are at the least somewhat attractive, and he's usually in pretty good fights, but he's a total numbskull. He's just a total dipshit outside of the ring. He says a lot of dumb things, and in the last few years, he's basically just been biding his time waiting to, basically doing nothing, waiting for a big shot, and a big part of it for me is that he's getting something that's basically undeserved. And I think that's
a big deal for a lot of people. I mean, his two best wins at welterweight are Alexander and Algieri, and he kind of squeaked by Algieri. So now he's getting a shot at the middleweight title, and he doesn't really have an elite win at welterweight. So, you know, from
exactly
that sort of, you know, from the, well, he hasn't earned it and blah, 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 blah standpoint, I do have to give him a little bit of credit, though. I mean, he really is a figment of his own imagination. He's been saying for years how he was this really great elite fighter even though he doesn't really have any elite wins. And he's been thumping about, you know, how he needs a Pacquiao fight or a Mayweather fight. And he finally ran his mouth long enough that he got an elite fight. I mean, he's going to get his ass handed to him, but, you know, full props to him for self-promotion.
That's what's kind of funny, is that he's really mouthed off his way into this fight. He's somehow convinced that many people. I mean, even before Mayweather officially retired, there was a decent chunk of people saying, oh yeah, totally, Mayweather versus Khan, it's a good stylistic matchup, it makes sense. And I mean, on some levels, I'm not going to totally throw my hands up and disagree, but it just comes down to what happens when he gets hit. What happens when he gets hit? We already know what happens when he gets hit. And, you know, Mayweather is one of the most accurate guys in the sport. Canelo's accuracy is improving. His offense is really ramping up. Yeah, I'm just not really seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, and despite the whole 155-pound bullshit, Canelo's a full-size middleweight. He walks in the ring at 170 pounds or a little bit more. That's middleweight size. You know, that's a full-size middleweight. And Khan's, I mean, he's sort of like an average size welterweight, but he got knocked the fuck out by Danny Garcia, who is nobody's impression of a big welterweight. And that was at 140 pounds.
Yeah, so, knocked fairly flat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he was doing the stanky leg. And so there's the entire idea of him being remotely competitive. I've seen some people going, oh, well, you know, Khan's really fast and he's got this and that. It's like, yeah, but at some point he's going to get hit. And he's not.
Exactly.
Like, he had Algieri walking him down. And Algieri can't punch at all. And he's not even that good. You know, say what you will about Canelo, but he's a pretty damn good fighter. So I don't see this matchup as being anything but an absolute farce. It'll be fun, though.
Well, it's actually crazy to even think about how long it's been. I mean, Danny Garcia knocking out Amir Khan, I swear, feels like it was, like, I don't know, a year, 18 months ago. That was 2012. That's coming up on 4 years ago, literally. And I just didn't even realize it was that long ago. You look at Amir Khan has fought. What's that?
I said, yeah, it seems like it was only yesterday, but yeah, I think the big thing too is, like, that's really the last, I mean, well, with the exception of the Matisse fight for Garcia, that's really the last two times those guys were in hard.
Yeah.
Like when was the last time either one of them had a really big fight?
And also on, I mean, to kind of add a little branch to that discussion tree, many people were saying, and including myself probably, going into the Matisse fight for Garcia, that, you know, Amir Khan was, for the most part, having his way until he got knocked out. I mean, he got knocked out, but he was doing very well until he got hit hard. But both of those things kind of figure their way into this discussion, too. And since that Garcia fight, Khan has fought five times in about 3 years, well, over 3 years, five times in over 3 years. So he stayed fairly inactive. He's been biding his time waiting for the big fight. And also on top of that, none of the guys that he fought were really serious punchers, with maybe the exception of Devin Alexander, who's a, you know, stiff puncher, I would say. But that was a fairly ugly fight that Amir Khan was just like, nothing's happening tonight.
Yeah, I think, well, the thing with Alexander, too, is, I mean, he knocked out Yarongo, but other than that, he's not ever been much of considered much of a puncher. I don't know, the thing with Khan is, and I think probably the thing that I always found that was so hilarious about him was that he could get knocked out a couple of times, never ask for a rematch, never like, oh, I need to go avenge these losses, and then, oh yeah, I'm the best in the world at this weight, and be talking about he wanted these elite matchups, and like never fought anybody top five, not especially not at welterweight. And 4 years, you know, 4 years for a welterweight is, that's a lifetime. I mean, it's not like these guys have 10-year-long primes like a heavyweight. That 4 years is the difference between being in your absolute peak and being shot just because you slowed down half of that.
Yeah, and
so we'll see.
To be as inactive as Amir Khan has been in this welterweight division is, I mean, that's almost a crime unto itself, because there are so many fights he could have taken in the meantime. And also on top of that, he apparently doesn't have any strong tie to one side or the other, because he's stepping across the aisle to take this fight, so to speak, you know, fighting on Premier Boxing Champions previously, or in his last, either, I'm sorry, his last fight, but Devin Alexander was a clear PBC guy as soon as that was figured. But needless to say, you know, stepping across and fighting on HBO, fighting HBO's biggest name, as a matter of fact. So that kind of, in my opinion, in hindsight, kind of says, why has he just been sitting here this entire time? We know why, to get the big fight, but it's a big waste of time.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, I think the big fight that, and I know this is definitely one a lot of people in the UK wanted to see, was him versus Kell Brook, who I'm really high on. I like Kell Brook a lot. I think he's a real good fighter. And Khan kept going, oh, Brook's not on my level. I'm like, really? Because Kell Brook's got a much better win at welterweight than Amir Khan does. I mean, he absolutely schools Sean Porter. So there's this really delusional quality about Amir Khan that some people will call it confidence, and I'm just going to call it delusion, is that he thinks he's this really big star. And so I've noticed some of the UK media treating him like he's a really big star, but I can never figure out why. Like, his accomplishments are relatively quite meager. Still seems to think it, and there are some media outlets that still seem to treat him that way, and I don't know. I mean, I guess good for him for running his mouth until he got a huge payday, but none of it makes any sense.
Well, I can't answer for everybody, obviously, but I can say that I do remember, I can't even say why exactly I taped this particular year of the Olympics in 2004, but for whatever reason, I remember that year I was really into the Olympics. I had heard about a number of the fighters, you know, that were bigger named or whatever. There was a lot of talk about Amir Khan, and you know, he was flashy, and there was a lot of attention on him and stuff like that, even in 2004, back in the Olympics. So he actually wound up, you know, in the final losing to, I think it was Mario Kindelan, or yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Mario Kindelan. Anyway, point is, there was a lot of focus on him even back then, over 10 years ago, and then there was a lot of focus on him early on in his career. He was a really big draw even before getting knocked out by Prescott, obviously, and that really seemed to, like, deflate the balloon. And then again, he wound up going back to I think it was Bolton, and fighting Julio Diaz and getting dinged around a couple years ago in a total surprise. And I think that a number of people jumped ship again after that. So he's had a problem, to kind of address what you were saying, as far as being a draw and stuff like that. UK fans don't really come over from the UK to the US like following him like a Ricky Hatton or somebody like that. And on top of that, he's fairly spotty in terms of ratings and stuff, unless he's in against a name fighter. So he's, yeah, delusional. There is no real basis of fact of him being a superstar or a huge draw, but for whatever reason, he still makes the kind of like TMZ type of news when he gets caught in, like, you know, sexting scandals and shit like that, apparently. But that type of stupid celebrity, you know, blah, 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 really fuels the ego of guys like Broner, Khan, Victor Ortiz, etc.
I don't know that we can really lump Vincent in there, because he's very special.
Yeah, he's pretty special with pretty much like everything he does. Like, he goes to a concert and gets in a fight, and that's on TMZ. But that's got to be as a Kenny Chesney show or something.
Yeah, I mean, poor Victor.
Oh, Victor Ortiz, Vincent Ortiz, Vladimir Klitschko. So, I don't know, man. How do you think this is going to actually wind up selling?
I think it's probably going to do okay just because it's Canelo. You know, maybe, I don't know, 200,000 or 300,000 buys. Which, you know, pre-Mayweather, that's atrocious, or that would be good. Post-Mayweather, it's a catastrophe, but they're not going to be paying him crazy money, so I think it'll do okay. I really don't have that much interest in seeing the fight. I know a lot of people who will watch it just to see Khan get knocked out. So there's
That's pretty low, though. I mean, like 2 to 3? I don't know. I mean, I would figure it probably closer to like 5, but I could be wrong because the
reaction
I think
negative. 5 on the upside is probably is definitely not out of the question, but I don't see it being any kind of like a ratings bonanza. I mean, it's just
no.
Khan really isn't that big of a draw anywhere. And, you know, he's sort of like a very bottom of the top 10 welterweight. So it's just like, really, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not going to get a ton of ratings, but the reaction to it has been pretty negative, I would say. I mean, it's not really – I don't really see a whole lot of positive.
Well, I think if it was just some random fight, like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's Khan and Alvarez, and they're going to fight at 155, people go, oh, all right, well, I mean, if that's on HBO, I'll watch that. But the idea of it, like, as – a defense of a lineal title is just such a joke. I wouldn't call it insulting exactly. It's just, it's so stupid. Like, that's, you know, that doesn't get anybody's mouth watering for Canelo's next fight. You're like, oh, well, if he needs to stay busy, sure, yeah, why not? But as a title defense, you know, get the hell out of here.
Well, there's always, like, a constant push and pull, like, with, like, the title, you know, in the belt discussion and stuff like that. How much are the belts worth? Are the belts worth anything? Blah, blah, blah. Supposedly, and I don't know if this has been cleared up, but I won't say supposedly, Amir Khan had tweeted out that this was going to be a 155-pound belt. I'm guessing he was meaning to say... I'm guessing he was meaning to say it would be for the WBC middleweight belt at 155-pound catchweight. That's what I'm guessing he meant. Who knows? It's WBC, so they, I don't know. They might be coming up with a 155-pound belt in addition to the 154-pound belt. That would just be, you know, succulent news there. But, yeah, I think that this is kind of one of those... arguments against the belts, needless to say. There are instances where I would sometimes agree and be like, yes, the fighters find them important, and yes, sometimes fights get made that wouldn't otherwise get made because of sanctioning bodies and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the vast majority of the time, I think we see stuff like this where there's some belt on the line and some scent of lineal titleage, blah, 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 because... saying this is for the middleweight title and that, you know, if by some fluke or something like that, Amir Khan wins, he's the middleweight champion is just, he's never beaten an upper echelon welterweight. It's,
well,
again,
I,
we're coming back to this, just like, what the fuck? I don't know. This is weird.
Well, I got a huge chuckle out of one of Dan Rayfield's tweets about it, comparing it to Hagler-Leonard or Hopkins De La Hoya. And I remember I saw it, and of course Dan has me blocked on Twitter, but I managed to see it because somebody else had like quoted it and it came up. Died laughing. Like, it was just so, like, I'm like, that's not even remotely in the same league. That would be like if Hagler said, I'm going to fight Carlos Palomino. But after Palomino had lost 4 straight, that would have been the equivalent. So it was just sort of, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to even know where to look in really with sort of the mainstream media outlets anymore. It's because you've either got them just shitting on everything or they're trying to sell you something that's stupid by giving you these really absurd historical comparisons. And I think that one sort of swung the other way, but pretty much anybody that's ever looked at my Twitter feed knows how I feel about Dan, so I probably don't need to elaborate on that.
Well, I'll refrain from, you know, piling on the Dan hate train, but I will say that he says some pretty annoying shit and has some fairly nonsensical points of view sometimes, but he's a good news source. I'll give him that much. Still, for whatever reason, with a lot of big boxing names and, you know, people who are analysts and write or go on to TV, HBO, whatever, like Max Kellerman, for instance, there's always this, there's this constant, you know, need to reach and find some historical, you know, juxtaposition or parallel or something like that. You know, I mean, looking at Sergey Kovalev and saying he reminds me of Bob Foster or some shit, you know, just crazy shit like that. I mean, Oscar De La Hoya was a multiple, you know, division champion, had faced a number of big names, you know, lost to Felix Trinidad, but for the most part was winning his bigger fights, rallying, etc., Icorte, Vargas, blah, blah, blah. So that one doesn't really hold up, obviously. I mean, you can pretty much go ahead and, like, kill all of these arguments for the historical, you know, parallels and everything. It just doesn't fit. Amir Khan does not compare to any of these kinds of fighters moving up.
No.
Daring to be great. I keep seeing that. He's daring to be great. Get out of here, dude.
Yeah, and I was not meaning to disparage Carlos Palomino, who would most likely have destroyed Amir Khan in less than three rounds, but, I mean, it's just, I get it, like, if you're trying to sell something, sell it, but, you know, the promoters have their own PR firms. You know, let Fred, what's his name, do that when he's tweeting about fistery for Manny Pacquiao and shit like that. Those guys get paid to do that. Let's try to remain just like a little bit neutral.
Well, I mean, let's not go overboard here. You know, like we can sure go ahead and compare it to like certain things and say levels. I do have to agree. I mean, Amir Khan does deserve some credit because this is a difficult fight. He's stepping up in weight, blah, blah, blah. It's a challenge. And it's probably going to be a fight that few people expect him to really win. And so he does get, I guess, you know, some amount of credit for that. But at the same time, I don't doubt that he thinks he can win because he's a fairly delusional guy. But
yeah.
I also have to question how much of this is for the money. Like, you know, it's a big payday. Good for him. But yeah. Gotta be for
yeah,
money.
Well, I mean, I give Khan full credit for balls, because it's not like he's going to go in there and just lay down. He will fight, but and I don't even know how much of a dare to be great it is. I think for him at this point, you know, like we've said, whatever it is, five fights in like 3.5 years, it's more like dare to get paid. Because when was the last time he had a really big payday? It damn sure wasn't against Alexander or Algieri. I mean, those were good paydays, but they weren't anything elite. So,
well,
I don't know. I don't want to harp on him too much because that is a big deal going up a couple of weight classes and taking on one of the better fighters in the world, but I'm not prepared to just be like, oh, my God, this guy, Amir Khan, how amazing is he?
And I don't want to disparage Canelo either because he's come a long way, but is he really the kind of fighter where if you defeat him, you're automatically great?
No, I don't think he is.
I mean, you know, that definitely is not what made Floyd Mayweather great. He's the only person who's defeated Canelo, of course, but I'm sure if Canelo keeps fighting and keeps, you know, fighting difficult opponents like he usually does, he'll lose again at some point. So, I mean, anyway, like I said, I don't mean to disparage him. It's just, you know, the whole, quote, dare to be great thing, it just cracks me up a little bit. I mean, I'm sure we're coming off as particularly cynical and whatnot during this entire discussion, but I don't know. I definitely know that I'm not alone in feeling that this fight is just kind of odd at best. Cliff Rold, for example, you know, writes for Boxing Scene, member of the BWA, et cetera, distinguished gentleman that he is. I know he's looking at this fairly cross-eyed, and he's a guy that I think is fairly reasonable. But yeah, the reaction has just been. This is what happened yesterday. I was at work, looked down at my phone for a couple minutes, had a few minutes of downtime, look onto Facebook, and I'm pretty sure that I have Golden Boy liked, you know, on my page, so I catch all the news and all that type of shit on my feed, and then I see Canelo versus Khan announced, and my first thought was, because it was Groundhog Day, for some reason in my head, I'm like, did they confuse Groundhog Day with fucking April Fool's Day? Like, did somebody, like, kind of get their wires crossed there? And so that's all I could think was, like, oh, that's a strange joke. And so I screenshotted it because I kept thinking, well, they're going to take that down any second. They sure didn't. When I went over to Twitter, it was already in full gear. Like, what the fuck? What is this? So, yeah, I can't stress enough that the reaction has just been mixed to negative.
Yeah, I saw it, and my initial reaction was, oh, well, that's just funny. And that was the only thing I could think about it was, this is funny.
And well, it's gotten to the point where it's like, it's gotten to the point where it's almost like the Twitter reaction and social media reaction alone is its own story and offers its own excitement because we know the depths that you know, boxing Twitter and whatnot will sink to for this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean it's gone from, well, you sort of have like quadruple backlashes because you'll have the initial backlash. And then you'll have the backlash against that going, oh, would you rather see this? And then you have the backlash against that. And then eventually everybody gets to like, all right, well, this is just stupid. Let's all move on with our day. And then hopefully, because it's boxing,
free of backlash, for sure.
6 to 8 weeks. Yeah, maybe people will move on with their day, but they'll find something else to complain about.
It's a huge demented tree of backlash. And one of the prominent branches on there is, you guys are a bunch of haters. This fight is totally fine. Just get on with it. Oh, you must not like boxing, etc. Unfortunately, that's where we find ourselves relegated quite a bit.
Yeah, that's actually extremely regular. Yeah, if you don't, if you're not on board with every mismatch, etc., you don't care about the sport. So. I don't know, you kind of have to find a happy middle ground, I would think.
Hey, man, Canelo fought Floyd Mayweather in 2013, okay? He deserves a break for 5 years. I'm just kidding.
Exactly.
He's actually fought some pretty good opposition. But,
yeah, I mean, he's had a good schedule, so I don't... I mean, I'm not really, like, so upset with Canelo for taking a gimme for his first time out. It just... like a 2 weight division lower, who's not even top five, gimme is a tad much. I mean, it's not quite Salka, but it's almost Salka.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that also figures into it too, the weight thing. You know, and one of the things that Cliff, for example, had pointed out somewhere else, I think in a Facebook group, was that, you know. Khan is also, in addition to kind of like taking it somewhat soft in the last few years, he's gotten the WBC silver welterweight title for whatever, you know, whatever importance you want to place on that, but that's like not a real title. So he hasn't even really won a title at 147 pounds and then is moving up and fighting for the middleweight title. So, yeah, a lot of people are going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody really would if it wasn't supposedly a title fight. And I wouldn't really even consider it a title fight if Canelo wasn't, you know, the lineal champ. I mean, if you want to talk about 155 pounds, yeah, sure, you can defend your stupid WBC trinket all you want at 155 pounds. I don't care, but for it to be like a legit championship, that's just kind of bullshit. I don't know. I mean, we've probably beaten this one to death at that point. Once we get into the lineal versus alphabet debate.
Yeah, well, that's an ongoing debate, needless to say, and it probably will be for the foreseeable future, at least until this issue is cleared up. So my question now is, do you think that, I mean, the more time that goes by without it happening, with there already being, like, issues about the matchup in place with the weight and a possible catch weight and stuff like that, I'm just kind of skeptical that they're going to come to, you know, a meeting of the minds for Golovkin versus Canelo. Do you think that's going to happen?
I think at some point HBO's purse strings are gonna get really, really tight, and they're just going to make him do it. At least I'm hoping that's what happens. You know, the catch weight is bullshit to begin with. But, you know, who else is he going to fight? Like, HBO has invested a lot of money in Golovkin, especially over the last couple of years, but in Canelo, too. Not to go, all right, listen, we're not going to pay for shit unless it's this guy. I mean, and with the Khan fight being pay-per-view, you could say it's them moving him to the pay-per-view only model, but at the same time, I think that's more HBO going, we're not spending our fucking budget on this. Like, no, we're not paying for that fight. We'll put it on pay-per-view and you can make as much as you want, but we're not going to pay for that fight. Because at some point, somebody's going to run out of money.
I mean, it's not quite on the level of Mayweather-Pacquiao, obviously, but it is kind of a, you know, a microcosm of that situation in a way, in that they can't, if they're going to be at or around the same weight for going to be, because Golovkin doesn't really seem that interested in moving to 168, they can't keep them separate for that long. It's just not going to work. There's going to be demand building eventually.
No, and the thing too is, and I don't think there's any way Canelo beats Golovkin, but Canelo is still in his mid-20s. The loss to Mayweather didn't hurt him that badly. And even if Golovkin destroys him, I don't think it hurts him that badly anyway. He can still do plenty of good business as a contender, and Golovkin's not going to be around forever. I mean, Golovkin's 33 going on 34. He's probably only got a couple more years left. So, yeah, I really don't see them as being in a bad position to go ahead and fight Golovkin maybe at the end of this year, because they're really running that risk of eventually people just lose interest.
Yeah, and something that I had actually forgotten to bring up and that I brought up yesterday when the fight had been announced is that there's another perspective of this, and that is if we're looking toward the Golovkin fight for Canelo, which, I mean, seems to be an inevitability if they're going to stay around the same weight, like I said, then we also have to look at whether or not Canelo's next fight is going to prepare him for Golovkin, and Amir Khan sure as shit isn't gonna.
No, like not even a little bit. Yeah, I mean, that's... I think probably at this point Canelo is as ready as he's ever going to be. I don't think even fighting somebody a little bigger is going to get him ready to fight Golovkin, because they're pretty much the exact same size weight-wise. Golovkin's a little taller and longer, but he's fought Cotto, and he looked great against Cotto. You know, who's there at 160 for him to fight that's going to get him any more ready? The answer is not really anybody. You know, if it's stay busy and keep his weight down against Khan, all right. But, yeah, I just don't see him really progressing as a fighter too much at this point. So I don't see them getting in anybody that's going to help him progress.
Well, so there sure isn't going to be, Yeah, there sure isn't going to be anybody that, you know, is going to magically prepare him for defeating Gennady Golovkin, especially if you don't really think he's going to win in the first place, which I think, you know, I think we're both kind of on the same page that it's unlikely, but it, you know, at least get somebody who maybe could possibly prepare him. I mean, but yeah, it seems like we're on the same page there that we just don't really think you're going to win. But yeah, Amir Khan ain't going to do shit for that, in my opinion. And what's the final prediction? What do you think happens?
Oh, Canelo KO 4. I'll give it to the fourth round.
It's generous of you. It's generous of you.
I'm really hedging that one.
Yeah, I think that it's probably likely that either Khan gets taken out early and just totally overwhelmed, or he might be able to move a little bit and keep Canelo away long enough to be caught up to later on in the fight. Because at some point, I just don't really see him standing up to the punching power. It's not that Canelo has turned into a monstrous puncher. I mean, the Kirkland KO was huge, and that was great, but that's also James Kirkland, who has shown, you know, chin issues previously and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, so I don't really think Canelo has turned into a huge puncher, but I don't think he needs to be to hurt Amir Khan either.
No.
What are my curiosity here? And I mean, Foley was a guy who paid close attention to the odds and stuff like that, so he might have actually looked at them, but I don't really look at odds really that often. Maybe I'll glance at them before fights and stuff like that, but I'm kind of curious as to what all of the kind of, you know, across the board odds are going to be. Canelo by KO, Amir Khan by decision, stuff like that. Such a weird fight for Cinco de Mayo weekend.
Yeah, well, I'm not really big on betting odds either, but Tom Craze from Bad Left Hook always does a full bet breakdown. So I'm sure that'll be up.
That's a good call.
I mean, you can, I mean, hell, apparently you can bet on just about anything. So yeah, if I need a degenerate gambling advice, I always go to Tom for it.
I'm not much of a gambler myself, although it is good to know the odds anyway, because generally speaking, especially Vegas odds will be, you know, at least somewhat on the money. I mean, when there's a lot of money to be won or lost in a fight, they're not generally going to be messing around with their money all that much. But anyway, I guess we'll see. So our consensus is that it's strange. That's all we really can come to. But who else should be getting this fight, just to kind of cover all bases here, just in case somebody's like, you know, there's nobody else he could possibly fight. Tell me, who could he fight then? Is there somebody else that we would be expecting to get this Canelo fight?
Yeah, I don't know. Anybody at 160 would be preferable, except Daniel Gill. He has shit the bed one too many times. Honestly, I'm sort of at that point where I really don't care. It's like, unless you're going to fight the guy everybody wants you to fight, shut up. I mean, we know he's not going to fight Jacobs because Jacobs PBC. But other than that, it's just sort of, like, really, who gives a shit?
Well, I mean, on one hand, I almost kind of understand why Canelo is not totally moving up to 160, because if he commits himself to 160, the division just isn't really that good, and there aren't that many fighters that he could face and to kind of prepare him for Golovkin, or, you know, to kind of bide his time or whatever you want to call it. So I kind of get that, and staying at 154 in a manner of speaking is probably a somewhat better option, but yeah, well, I don't understand why they had to get a welterweight. That's pretty much all.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have had any problem with, like, Lee or Saunders or shit, even David Lemieux. Any of those guys would have been fine for me. Golovkin's fighting Dominic Wade, and ugh. But it's still not that bad.
Well, there as there always tends to be, you know, they've already kind of like factioned off, like fans and media members have already kind of, you know, taken sides and, you know, acted accordingly. And of course, I've already seen a few, oh, well, look at who Golovkin is fighting. But my only response to that is, who do you think has more control over that, Golovkin or Canelo?
Right.
There's really only one answer, and that's Canelo. If Canelo wanted to fight Golovkin next, they would make that fight happen. That fight would happen. So, I mean, and I'm not trying to suggest either that Canelo doesn't have a good track record or anything like that. I think he does fight tough fights, and he deserves a little bit of leeway and everything. But it's just, you know, again, as is the MO of boxing lately, they're building up to a fight that really doesn't need build-up. It is where it is right now. Like, it's the stage has already been set. They've already sparred a few times. There's already been, you know, talk in the press. They're kind of trash-talking a little bit. They've already started negotiations. There's no... It could just be next. But that's just kind of how things are playing out lately.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But that's the world we live in.
Indeed. And that's exactly how Phil Collins would have put it, too.
Yes.
So, normally, I would be recapping this last weekend's HBO stuff with Foley, but since Foley is on a somewhat extended vacation, I wanted to ask you a couple things about it, if you got the time.
I do, yeah.
So, exactly how big a waste of time was Sergey Kovalev versus Jean-Pascal do? Just lay it on me.
I mean, I watched it. In the ring, it was a gigantic waste of time. You know, it was fairly pointless, but as far as who you're going to get Kovalev in the ring with, then you do have to keep him busy. Pascal was, and I say was at this point, was still a top five guy. One had moments. I mean, it wasn't like nip and tuck back and forth. Pascal had moments, but it was mostly one-sided. Once you got done watching it, though, you just went, holy shit, that was a complete waste of my time. Because it was, I mean, that was just a cat playing with its food. But, you know.
They were seeming to kind of, they were holding on pretty tight to basically one or two moments that Pascal had in the first fight. And, you know, since we didn't get to preview it last week, that's pretty much what I would have said then. They were holding on to only a few moments. I think I might have even said that with Aris, but the point is there were literally only maybe 2 points in the fight where Pascal landed a punch and Sergey Kovalev looked, I don't know, rattled enough, shaken enough, taken off his game enough to really say, oh, well, that was interesting. You know, what would happen if he landed a couple more of those? Even so, Kovalev came right back. Nothing really happened. You know, the momentum didn't really change. Pascal still got, for the most part, beaten up over whatever it was, I think 9 rounds. And, yeah, it was just on its way to being a repeat of that. Except for, holy shit, dude. Kovalev is one cold-hearted bastard. That dude is one calculating, devilish son of a bitch. Holy shit. After the fight, him just basically saying, yeah, I pretty much just, like, beat his ass and punished him. I could have knocked him out at any time, but I didn't want to. I mean, he was really beating the shit out of Jean-Pascal. Like, it kind of got to a point where I was getting a little pissed at the ref. I think it was Michael Griffin, where I'm just sitting there going, like, what the fuck are these people doing? Like, he's getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing, too, is that it was so clinical, because it wasn't, you could tell that he wasn't trying to get him out of there. I mean, you really could, it was obvious from about probably the third round on, like, oh, he's not trying to knock him out, he's just beating him up, letting him recover, beating him up a little more, letting him recover, and, you know, rinse, lather, repeat. From that perspective, you know, you kind of go, oh, well, I wish Kovalev would have gotten him out of there. The ref could have stopped it really any time because it wasn't competitive. Freddie Roach could have stopped at any time. And that, like, if I'm not going to complain about a fight getting stopped, generally very few other people will too. Because I do tend to be that, okay, let it go guy. But, I mean, Pascal was just in a shell. He wasn't trying. And there was that one round where he got outlanded 30-1. And the one was like a really weak jab. I want to say that was probably like the fifth or the sixth.
I think it was the fifth. It was either the fifth or the sixth, but regardless, yeah, you're on the money as far as, like, about what point in the fight it was.
Well, and I was looking at the punch stats afterwards. So, for every two punches that Pascal landed, Kovalev landed 11. the final stat was 165-30.
So about a 5.5-1.
5.5-1.
That's just, yeah, I mean,
That is a one-sided ass-kicking.
I mean, like, you know, we already know from the first fight and from various other fights that Jean Pascal is a tough dude. That guy is a guy who's can, you know, take a licking and keep on ticking, as they say. Tougher than a $2 steak, as the even older folks used to say. But the whole point is that you kind of have to be able to, like, save a fighter from themselves in the corner and with the referee. And the referee was standing right there the entire time. He even looked at a few points like he was going to step in and never did. And so that's why I was kind of like, man, this referee's got a front row seat and he's watching this dude getting the shit kicked out of him. And then also not even really throwing punches back and still, you know, not doing anything. And Freddie Roach, I mean, he eventually did the right thing, but for a few rounds he was like, you know, come on, I need you to fight. And the dude threw like four more punches around and he let it go. Come on, you guys got to do better than that.
Yeah, I don't know what the impetus for them to not stop it was, but anybody could have stopped that one, and I don't think anybody would have complained. Definitely not Jean Pascal. I mean, he would have made an act of complaining, but he wasn't fighting back. He was just taking his beating. Because it seemed like really early on, he was like, oh, shit, I got nothing for this guy. I'll just survive until somebody saves me. And that's really all he did.
Well, the kind of, you know, the question was, what could Jean Pascal do differently this time? You know, I mean, we already see him got the shit kicked out of him the first time for the most part. Not as hard, but we already saw him, you know, take some hard shots. We already saw him struggle and blah, 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 blah. So what could he do differently in the rematch that would bring some kind of different outcome? And realistically, the answer was throw more punches. But again, realistically, that was not going to happen because Jean Pascal is not that kind of fighter. He's always had output issues. He's always had issues fighting from round to round consistently and not taking rounds off, taking minutes off, etc. And then very early on in this fight, it became apparent that it was like nothing changed. Not only did nothing change, he's actually reacting worse this time to the punches. So,
yeah, Pascal, he's awkward, and he's one of those guys who fights in little spurts, like you were saying. But that doesn't work really well with somebody who has as fluid and consistent an offense as Kovalev. There's never any point in any fight when Kovalev isn't working. I mean, there's just not. He's always working. He's always pressuring. Even if he's not throwing a ton of punches, he's still right in front of you. So whereas, you know, Pascal's big thing that he could do is he could knock you out of your rhythm. Well, a guy that is always in rhythm, you're not going to knock him out of it. So really all he could do is just get his ass kicked worse.
That might be something that many people, myself included, have kind of underrated about Sergey Kovalev, and that's that apart from him being active, he's not a dumb fighter at all. He's the guy who sets up shots really, really well, and he was doing that all night long, and to Pascal's detriment, needless to say.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen a fighter that goes to the body with straight punches as well as Kovalev in a long time. Because, you know, a lot of times when Pascal was thinking he was going to get a jab to the face, he wound up getting a jab in his midsection, and Kovalev's right hand to the body, too, was fantastic. And that's just another one of those things that really throws people off of their rhythm is, in general, a body puncher needs to get in close to work the body, and Kovalev's doing it from range because he's throwing straight punches.
One of his hardest shots. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of his hardest shots is that jab to the body. That jab to the body is rough.
Yeah, and those hurt. Those are
especially
painful.
And he's got heavy hands. So I mean, I think these are the kinds of things that, you know, make him such a force, is that he's not just a guy headhunting, and he knows how to finish a fight. And again, I think it can't be stressed enough that Jean Pascal is just a really tough guy, and so just running through him like that, basically twice, it's pretty impressive. So my question now is, they've already basically set up the Adonis Stevenson thing is dead in the water. I don't even really know how much I even was really getting into the fact that they were renegotiating and all that type of stuff. It just never really seemed like they would get over the issue of HBO and Showtime, which they never did. So now that that's dead, and for sure we're moving on to Sergey Kovalev versus Andre Ward, assuming Ward beats Sullivan Barrera. So who do you got in that one?
Kovalev.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even need to think about it. Well, Andre Ward's last really competitive fight was in 2012. His last really big fight was in 2013, which is Chad Dawson. And then, you know, what the hell has he done in almost 4 years? And he's had a bunch of injuries. And the other thing, too, is I just don't see him being able to manhandle Kovalev. And a lot of – I think anybody comparing Ward to a young Bernard Hopkins is absolutely wrong, because a lot of what Ward does is mugging, where he jab and grabs. And he'll turn you and he'll frustrate you, and then he'll start landing counters, but – he's not going to be big enough and strong enough to manhandle Kovalev, who I think has enough volume and movement and is creative enough offensively to really make Ward open up. And if Darnell Boone can put you on your ass hard, Sergey Kovalev sure as hell can.
Well, I think since that point in his career, well, I don't think, we all know, since that point in his career, Andre Ward has obviously gotten much better. But he's also been, you know, really squeezing about all he can out of that Super 6 victory, which was great, by the way. I'm not gonna diminish that. That was absolutely fantastic. I loved that tournament, even if it did wind up taking way too long to compete. Regardless, it was cool. He won it. Great. Good for him. But he's really getting about all the mileage he can out of that. The Chad Dawson thing, you know, Chad Dawson looking so awful in that fight and then going on to just basically be ruined after that fight, probably from some of the weight shit, et cetera, et cetera. And he's just been out. He's been injured. He's been inactive. I mean, he is fantastic from that close and mid-range against fighters who don't know what to do about it. You know, he looks great mugging the shit out of an Edison Miranda or an Alan Green, or, you know, even later on in the fight against Saki Obika once he settled in. He looks great doing that against those kinds of fighters. I don't think he's going to be able to keep up that kind of physical fight against Sergey Kovalev. And also on top of that, from that longer and mid-range where Andre Ward really is good and really has gotten much, much, much better over the years, that is a range that I think he's going to have trouble with because of that Kovalev jab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, don't get me wrong, though. It's a very interesting fight.
No, it is absolutely fascinating fight, and I would love to see it. I think it's a much more interesting fight than Kovalev Stevenson.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for reasons of sort of continuity and lineage, we would all love to see Kovalev fight Stevenson, but Kovalev Ward, stylistically and personality-wise, is just so much a better fight. Because Ward is absolutely insufferable.
Totally insufferable, and just basically, well, I mean, he kind of fashions himself as some kind of goody-goody nice guy. But then I think that with a, especially like against with Andre Ward versus Karl Frotch in particular, that was one of those fights where I was kind of like, damn, he really is a dick. But he forced Karl Frotch to kind of relent in that, you know, face-off or whatever that was. I don't think that's going to happen with Kovalev. I think that if he at all tries to get bullish, tough, you know, jerky, whatever, I think that he's going to be in for a pretty shitty surprise.
Yeah, because there's, I mean, maybe with the exception of, like, Marcos Maidana, there's not really anybody else in the sport that gives less of a shit than Sergey Kovalev. I mean, he just does not care.
He's like, he doesn't really strike me as a loose cannon type like an Andrew Galata. You know what I mean? Not really like that. He's more of like, if you put him in a position where you're trying to like foul him or hit him low or do something to him that's going to like try to take him out of his game or something like that, he's going to like do it back three times as hard, and then he's going to like make you wish you really hadn't started that shit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's kind of to me is sort of with, I guess there was somewhat of a blowback about Kovalev, is the interview, which the interview with Kellerman, which I thought was absolutely brilliant, because I love to see anybody that enjoys their work. And if your work is beating up other people, hey, you should enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, Kovalev is one of those guys that people go, oh, well, you know, should he really be enjoying that? Like, well, yeah. Why wouldn't he? He's really good at it. He gets paid a lot of money to do it. No, it's not nice, but he's got a nice wife and a family and a little fruity dog, so clearly he's not all bad. Like, it's just a guy that enjoys his work, and he's not one of those dudes that's going to sit there and apologize for himself. He's just being himself. And that's what I like about him, is that, yeah, you ask him, do you like Jean Pascal? No. I enjoyed beating him up. Awesome. 10 points for honesty.
Well, with it's a risk of getting into the conversation, which is, you know, a podcast episode unto itself. I mean, I think that if I were Sergey Kovalev, assuming that my intentions were all pure and, like, you know, all the racist type of talk is, for the most part, a misunderstanding or what or cultural, whatever you want to call it. If I were Sergey Kovalev and that were the case, I would be looking at guys like Jean Pascal. And I mean, with the whole banana incident at the, I mean, I would probably be like as confused as anybody else if I were Sergey Kovalev. First, they're mad at me because I made a joke, and then now this dude's making the same joke, but making it in reverse. And but is that okay? What the fuck? You know, I'd probably be confused. But I would probably enjoy beating that dude up too. I would enjoy doing my job. I would enjoy, you know, making my craft look good and stuff like that. So I can't totally, you know, bemoan the guy for it. But at the same time, I think you do have to admit it's kind of frightening.
Sure, why not? Yeah, I mean,
well, not to you. You're like, you know, Navy SEAL, you know, killed a half dozen people. But, you know, and that was yesterday.
Nothing like that. Nothing like that.
but you know, it is for the average boxing viewer, I think when boxing has kind of, you know, quote unquote evolved in a way, or at least the tradition is that you beat the shit out of each other, then you hug and everything's good. And, oh no, that was just business and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's kind of the quote unquote regular, the normal. And so to hear a guy just be like, yeah, that was good. I beat the shit out of him and it was awesome. That's just kind of, I think, weird to a lot of people and frightening, like I said.
Yeah, I would agree. I understand that. Just from my own perspective, that I think it's fantastic. Because it's honest. I mean, I don't want to hear, like, you remember when Oscar De La Hoya used to give all those interviews where he would be doing that whole aw shucks thing, but you knew that as soon as it was over, he was back in a back room with like four of the promotional models doing God only knows what. I mean, a guy like Kovalev just being honest about who he is.
By now we know what they were doing.
We do, but I really don't want to go into that detail.
That's okay. That's okay. I understand. Oh, goodness. Well, the funny thing, I'll never forget after the Trinidad fight, the Oscar De La Hoya versus Trinidad fight, and then Trinidad got the decision, which was, in my opinion, not nearly as horrible as a lot of people thought it was at the time, and it wasn't really a robbery. Both of them didn't do shit in a bunch of different rounds. But I remember right afterward on the pay-per-view, they're following Oscar going down the hallway, like walking from the ring after they announced the decision. And you hear him because, like, you know, he's always put on this kind of good guy persona and, you know, always giving canned responses and shit like that. And he, like, cusses a few times. And he's like, God damn it, I thought I won the fucking fight. And then he looks up and sees the camera and he's like, oh, geez, gosh. Like, the cussing turns into, like, not cussing anymore. So we kind of have a better idea of, you know, who Oscar really is or was at that time. But point is, yeah, I do have to agree somewhat, at least on some level, that it's good to have somebody who doesn't give a shit with their responses and not the type of doesn't give a shit like an Adrian Broner who just says, like, all sorts of stupid things, you know, straight out of the gutter, but somebody who says things, you know, as they mean them and says crazy things and scary things that most people like to not think about. So in some ways, I think that's actually pretty good. I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we tell little kids all the time, just be yourself. I like Sergey Kovalev just being himself.
Indeed. And we both pretty much are annoyed by Andre Ward being himself, I think.
Yeah. I think God is annoyed with Andre Ward just being himself at this point.
If I were God, I'd be annoyed with him constantly associating himself with me, especially by name. But I don't know. It's, I guess, better than the previous All-Terrain Warrior. That was All-Terrain Warrior or something like that. I'm pretty sure that was Andre Ward's first boxing nickname.
I don't remember that.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure All-Terrain Warrior was the original. Pretty awful.
Yeah, it might be even worse.
So, I guess, I guess I kind of already opened up that can of worms, so I guess it doesn't really matter for us now, but the racist thing. We don't have to get into a whole long discussion about it, but I'm just curious where you stand. Because, I mean, if I'm being honest here with the whole Kovalev and the T-shirt and the previous interviews about Ismail Salak, and then I think there was another interview with some other shit. I mean, on one level, I do like rooting for Sergey Kovalev. He's a really good fighter. You know, he's a guy who I like to see him score big wins and knockouts and stuff like that. There's even, on some levels, he seems like a fairly jovial guy, fun to hang out with before he was the guy, you know, punching the little tiny punching bag on HBO, and that was hilarious. But then when the T-shirt thing happened and then it just kind of came to light and a bunch of other shit, it made me feel uncomfortable. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how else to really say it. Maybe I shouldn't, and maybe I'm being too, like, introspective and shit like that by feeling uncomfortable, but I don't know. Am I, like, wrong to feel uncomfortable here?
I don't know. You do live on the West Coast, so.
That's true.
That's probably normal. None of it made me uncomfortable. You know, obviously, the jokes were in poor taste. But I'm not at that same point where, I mean, I didn't think they were so horrible. Like, they were terrible jokes. And, yeah, kind of things should never, ever be commended. And you should just go, no, dude, that's a fucking terrible joke. Don't say shit like that. At the same time, though, I don't feel any guilt about being a Kovalev fan because he made them. Especially given the jokes that I've listened, like, that I've paid to listen to on comedy specials, what have you, I'm not at that point where I don't know. For me, it's more just a speech thing. And, you know, I don't know if he's a racist or not, because there are plenty of people that make racist jokes that aren't racist. So,
Yeah.
I really can't say, and I don't feel like I would be, if I did have an opinion on it, it would be from a very small sample size.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, I'm not just going to dismiss him. I'm not just going to be like, fuck that, I can never root for him again. I think that it's obviously, you know, like most things in real life, it's more complicated than that. It's not just, he's a racist, and then you dismiss it, and that's it. I mean, I can see where somebody could think that making a few jokes that were in poor taste, to say the least, and especially in our society when there are a lot of things in poor taste, Donald fucking Trump, you know, out in the middle of, you know, yeah. So it's kind of tough for me to really look at the guy and be like, well, you see what's going on in our society and you don't think this is okay, or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's, like I said, kind of confusing based on Jean Pascal whipping out the bananas at the press conference and stuff like that. That would be confusing to me as someone not from the U.S., somebody shaking their finger at me and saying, you can't say this type of stuff, but, you know, a whole lot of other people can and get patted on the back for it. That would be confusing. So I can see where Kovalev is totally not a racist and just made some really shitty jokes. I think part of my issue with what happened and how it happened was how Top Rank kind of just gave an all-encompassing, you know, he apologized for it, now let it go type of thing, when it really does kind of need to be dealt with a little bit more, it seems, because it's still floating about there. But,
yeah, well,
I guess I am being a little West Coast and being sensitive about it. I'll try not to be so West Coast.
I mean, the whole thing, too, was, and people brought up, like, Stevenson's past, which Stevenson's, and I'm not trying to do that, well, so-and-so did it, so you have to forgive them, because it's obviously different situations. But I'm personally of the opinion that if you do something and you've atoned for it, which in the case of making a racist joke, yeah, Kovalev said he was sorry, okay. Well, that's about the atonement. I don't think people need to go through their whole lives tarred and feathered. Stevenson went to jail, as far as I recall. So obviously he atoned for that. But I don't think that every little thing you've done in the past should be something that you have to carry around like your scarlet letter so that everybody knows what a shitty person you were at some point in your life. I think people really need to kind of get over certain things and practice a little compartmentalization. You know?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
The point I made was, you know, if you have an issue with Kovalev, then you also need to make sure that, you know, oh, I can't watch him because he made a racist joke. Well, then you need to make sure that every mechanic who's ever worked on your car has never said a homophobic slur or a racial slur or anybody that bags your groceries. Like, you've got to be consistent about that. You don't get to pick and choose and go, well, I know about it this time, so now I'm drawing a line in the sand. You know, you really can't, like, you do have to practice some compartmentalization. And, you know, he said, oh, you know what, I'm sorry. Well, if it was sincere, great. If not, hey, more's the fool me. But I don't really give a shit about his opinions on race relations. I like watching the guy fight. So for me, it's easy to compartmentalize that.
Well, and then there is the whole angle about, you know, separating the art from the artist. He's not quite right. Roman Polanski or Woody Allen here either. You know what I'm saying? He's not like... we know of committing, like, sexual assault and shit, so...
Right.
There does have to be.
It was a joke on Twitter. I think people in general need to learn to lighten the fuck up about that sort of thing. You know, obviously, when I saw it, I was like, ooh, yeah, that's probably not cool. But at the same time, it has never diminished it for me, and I don't feel like everything you've ever done needs to bring up every time you do something in the future.
That's a good point. That is a good point. And he has, you know, like you said, there has already kind of been a price paid for it. It's not like it's not like he just totally got away with it. And that's actually one of the things that also made me bring it up, apart from it being an issue and being a topic of discussion. The other day I had seen that Paul Magno from the Boxing Tribune, who many people are familiar with. Yeah, a lot of people are super best friends with him. But I try not to dismiss him, because sometimes he does bring up some very valid points. But one of the things that he had written the other day was people need to – I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but he wrote something along the lines of people need to stop ignoring Sergei Kovalev's racist past. And I was kind of like, well, it wasn't ignored. Like, it was dealt with then, and it came out then, and it was a PR issue, like a serious PR issue. It wasn't just, you know, five people noticed and moved on. It was kind of harped about for a little bit at the time. And so I'm not sure if it was just kind of he had a selective memory or a short memory or whatever the case was. But anyway, that was part of what made me bring it up, was that it was kind of pushed back into the spotlight because of that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's kind of like, and I'm not disparaging any of these people who did this, but you remember in the build-up to Mayweather-Pacquiao, you know, Mayweather's domestic assault history, which I think is heinous. If you want a good reason to say, because he's unrepentant, to say, I'm never going to buy that guy's fight, hey, good on you, because that dude should have gone to jail for way longer. But you had, like, all of these people up on their soapboxes before that fight. And then Mayweather-Berto came around, and they were all very silent. So it's like, it's only an issue when you can get as much attention for it as possible, but the rest of the time it's not important. Well, you know, it's just sort of this whole, we can't forget this. Like, yeah, but we already dealt with it. Once you've dealt with it, it's when it's time to move on.
Well, in all due respect to these two, in particular, and I mean, it's not totally fair to only call them out, but it's just that they're easy to name, and they did put their names at the forefront of the discussion here. But Michelle Beadle and Rachel Nichols, I mean, all due respect to them for what they do most of the time, and for the reporting and blah, blah, blah. I'm not trying to disparage that at all. But the way that they really forced their names to the front of the pack, especially prior to the Pacquiao fight, I mean, I'm not saying that they asked to be treated differently or badly or anything like that, if that's what happened. But at the same time, it just winds up looking like a publicity grab. Like you said, when they're getting all uppity and getting all up in arms about it now, and then the Berto fight comes around, other fights come around, other situations come around, and they're not saying shit. And then also, they have, you know, Dan Roberts, Iron Mike Gallego, to thank for the research that he did for that, you know, long and well put together article he wrote about it, The Problem with Floyd Mayweather, for Deadspin. If you haven't read it, check it out. It's, like Mr. Swain said, pretty heinous shit. So yeah, I mean, there are hashtag levels to this boycotting talk. And so I would have to say that over in the grand scheme of things that, you know, Sergei Kovalev's transgressions are probably kind of low on the scale.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and I really do not care for Michelle Beadle on the fight game at all, because I'm still not entirely sure what she does on that show. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Rachel Nichols as a reporter and as a journalist. I mean, like, she tore into Roger Goodell over a ton of shit, like a pit bull on a pork chop. So she's a great journalist. And I thought her interview with Mayweather was, you know, more or less pretty spot on.
No, it was totally spot on. Totally spot on.
It turned into such a circus after that. And then what it boils down to is, okay, well, now nobody's watching, so now the outrage gets to be gone too. And I'm not picking on them as individuals. It's certainly not Dan. But, you know, this selective outrage machine really kind of just needs to, like, maybe go away a little bit. Because there's a lot of things that happen that maybe haven't been brought to light, and yes, they should be. And then there's a lot of things that have been brought to light and dealt with, and then they need to go away. And then people want to spin them up every now and again just to get attention. And I don't necessarily think that's the deal with Mayweather in that one particular case, although some of it was. But, like, the deal with Kovalev's racism was, like, yeah, we all know about that. He said he was sorry. Everybody moved on. You know, Pascal wanted to make it a bigger deal than it was. Like, I think in Kovalev's head, and this is more or less the comments that I saw, were like, you know, listen, it was a bad I admit it. It was a stupid thing to do. I said I was sorry. You don't need to bring it up all the time.
Well, he obviously does. I wouldn't imagine that he gives a shit what I think about him as a fighter, as a person, or anything like that, because he's got his own shit to deal with. But at least me personally, and I think that some others would probably agree, a just kind of an apology that's not a 2016 apology would help. Like, not a, look, guys, I'd been, you know, up a couple days, I was training real hard, had a lot of shit going on, but look, I was wrong. Not one of those apologies, but like a, I fucked up, and I'm sorry, and it's not going to happen again. Just an apology would go a long way. And so whatever that takes care of for anybody else, I don't know. But anyway,
yeah,
I think that it would go a long way toward just kind of winning back some goodwill. Beyond that, he fights the how he fights. He seems like he's
right.
going to be a force to be reckoned with regardless. And so we're going to wind up having to deal with it one way or another.
I guess my kind of feeling on it, too, is I don't know that he really owes any of us an apology. The joke was specifically at Adonis Stevenson. So if he wanted to apologize
yep.
to Adonis Stevenson, that would be his business. But for anybody else to say, like, if especially like me or you, we're like, you know what, I was offended, he needs to apologize. You know what, fuck us. We don't even get to be offended. Like, how are we offended? It doesn't affect us at all. So I do know, I think probably my issue with it to a lot of extent is the people sort of demanding that he apologize. I'm like, are you demanding that he apologize to Adonis Stevenson, whom the joke was about? Or are you demanding that he apologize to you, in which case you are an egomaniacal asshole? Because that whole, well, you need to apologize. Well, like, if you're demanding that he apologize to society, you know, what the fuck? He doesn't owe us the plural an apology. I don't know. I sort of have these very weird, you know, I mean, I'm a very staunch libertarian, so I get into these very intense free speech rants every now and again.
No, and I mean, it does. That's fair. It's totally fair. But I mean, you know, of course, the free speech argument is that you're totally welcome to say what you say, but then the consequence is going to be the consequence. And in our society,
right.
unfortunately, I'm not saying I agree with the consequence all the time, but unfortunately in our society, the consequence is going to be that people are going to start waggling their fingers at you hard as fuck. And that's kind of what happened in this point.
Relentless public shaming.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be relentless. I mean, like, and that was kind of my point from before, was just that, like, we've already done it. Like, he's already been shamed, and he's already kind of answered for it. Now, from this point forward, though, if he were to continue making jokes like that or continue saying, you know, kind of wonky things, I mean, I think that at this point we would kind of be like, all right, well, you can no longer say that this is just a joke or you didn't understand. Maybe you are just kind of an asshole. But that, again, would be the consequence, and it would be up to everybody else to say, well, then fuck that. I'm not paying for, you know, I'm not paying to watch an asshole fight. And that would be their decision.
Yeah, for sure. And I have actually just got a message. I'm going to have to hop off of here.
No, it's totally fine, because that about sums up what we were going to say anyway. So,
all right, well, that works out good for me.
So thanks, everybody. Cutting it short, but anyway, should be good enough to please most people. Thanks for listening in. So we'll be back, or at least I'll be back. And in the meantime, tell all your Ray Popwatch and Prime Poplosky buddies and all that type of stuff about Top Men Boxing Radio if you enjoy listening. If you're on Twitter, follow Mr. Swain at mswain0351. Read his work at the Queensberry Rules, please. And follow me on Twitter, Patrick M. Connor. Visit thefightcity.com. And finally, just like Top Men Boxing Radio on Facebook. Rate us on iTunes, blah, blah, blah. Matthew, always a pleasure, sir.
Patrick, my absolute pleasure. Have a good one, man.
All right, everybody. Take it easy.